Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening in. Today's podcast is a little different. I had the privilege of attending a tasting event at the Napa Valley Wine Academy in early July. When I heard that an Arizona winery was coming to Napa, I had to take the drive north to find out more. Aridus Wine Company opened its doors in 2012 after restoring a 28,000 square foot apple warehouse. It is a family-owned winery that also acts as a custom crush facility. After tasting the wines, I wanted to delve a little deeper into the story behind this winery and learn about the winemaker, Lisa Streed. The podcast is broken up into two parts. The first, you will hear from Lisa as she talks about the winery and what it's like to grow grapes in Arizona. The second portion is an interview with Lisa herself. Hope you enjoy. Sláinte.
So Lisa's joining us all the way from Wilcox, Arizona. She's going to talk a little bit about why it's a great area to grow grapes. So I won't take up any more of your precious time, but please help me in welcoming Lisa this morning.
Just a map of the state, you'll probably get really tired of me showing you this. So just to give you a sense of, you know, what it looks like, et cetera, so Arizona is the last of the 48 contiguous United States who have actually been admitted into the United States. And really until just about 100 years ago, the entire southern portion of the state was part of Mexico. So most of the wine growing state. There are 21 groups of Native peoples that are from this state, including Hopi, Tohono O'odham, Navajo, Apache, and many others. And it became a state after removing all of the most controversial parts of the Constitution that they proposed to Congress, which included things like women's suffrage and direct elections of the senators. Once the U.S. Congress asked them to remove them from the Constitution, and they did, they were admitted to the Union, and then they promptly put them all back to the Constitution. The economy of the state is really driven by manufacturing, mining, and tourism. Wine growing is a minuscule part of the economy. It represents 0.02% of the state's GDP. That is 56 million is what they think the wine industry generates for the state. Agriculture is big. We have such a long growing season. We grow cotton, nuts, vegetables, and there's plenty of livestock. So this is a copper mine. It's the leading copper producer in the nation. There's also zinc and uranium mines, so a lot of rare earth metals. And obviously this is a view of the Grand Canyon, so that's one of our states. As you can see, it's situated here in the southern portion of the United States. We're actually, we're quite close to the Sea of Cortez here, so that really does affect our weather patterns quite a bit. In the summer, we'll have storms move up and we get monsoons, and they're starting right about now. They'll last through about mid-September. And when I say monsoon, I really do mean it. We'll get giant thunder clouds that build up over the course of the day, and then just dumpy rain. And you know, it's surprising it doesn't affect them as much as you might think, because we have really rigorous soils, and it's so dry there that everything dries out quite quickly, so we don't tend to see these sort of fungal diseases building up as a result. The sun comes up, or comes out again immediately after the monsoons, and dries out
everything.
For now. Yeah, this dumps rain, and then it's sunny. But I did put in here, you know, a little bit of Europe, just so you can get a sense of how it lines up with some of the old world growing regions. Here's the 35th parallel and the 50th parallel. And on the next slide, I put in Southern Hemisphere as well. So Wilcox is situated at 32.25 north in terms of latitude. And in terms of globally, that is kind of online with, say, Mendoza, Argentina, which is at 32.8 degrees south. The Hunter Valley also is at 32.9 degrees south. So it's really not too far off in terms of some of these other growing regions in the world that are perhaps more and then the major geographic regions, you can kind of break the state into up north here, you would consider the Colorado Plateau, then you have a bit of a transition zone, and then there's down here is really a basin and range sort of formations that can be broken up into a swath that are considered the Mexican Highlands and then the Sonoran Desert. And all of the growing regions in the state would be really considered as being in the basin and range area. Although some of the northerly stuff would be sort of a transition zone between the Colorado Plateau and the Mexican. So in terms of what we produce each year, almost 200,000 gallons of wine in Arizona. As you can see, that's really minuscule in terms of this is nationally. There are 83 active winery licenses in the state. There are other winery licenses out there, but these are the ones that are actively producing. And Aridus, where I work, we produced last year 27,000-ish gallons, which is about 14%. The winery was started in 2012, so we're really quite young. Here's a view of our production facility. So up front, we've got this lovely building. Inside, they made use of a lot of reclaimed materials, and it wants some design for it. It's really actually hard out. And then the back here, it's a apple warehouse that was built in 1982. Wilcox used to produce quite a lot of apples, and when it was no longer used for apple storage, our owners, Scott and Joan, purchased the building, refabbed the inside, and turned it into a winery space. And you can't see it, but we were really lucky. We have a giant covered crush pad and just so much space. So we really have room. I don't expect you to really read this. We make a huge variety of different wines, generally in really small lots. And I just want to put this on here to give you a sense of the scope of the things that we're producing. Oh, here's this map. So our main tasting room is located here in Phoenix. Wilcox itself is right here, about where this where I test starts to occur. And then our vineyards are down here in this area. And talking about growing regions in the state, this whole basin right here really is the Wilcox APA. And then these are the Chiricahua Mountains. So I'll get into that a little bit more. But you can kind of get a sense of the distance here. It's from Wilcox, it's about a 3-hour drive, 3.5-hour drive up to Scottsdale, and then from Wilcox to our vineyards, it's another 40 minutes. So here we go. This is Wilcox itself, our building, our custom crush facility is north of town, and then here's Arizona, 45 minutes to Wilcox. So I wanted to talk a little bit about where we get our grapes. We do have interesting vineyard we'll talk about, but right now many of our grapes are coming from the Wilcox AVA. It was approved in October 2016 as an AVA, and it encompasses 126,000 acres. This AVA is responsible for 75% of the grapes that are being produced for wine in the state of Arizona. So this is really the major growth region in the state. There are 21 vineyards there, 18 wineries, and some of the features that distinguish the Wilcox AVA are that it is a completely closed basin, so the aquifer is only recharged by rainwater, and there are no creeks or rivers or anything that flow into the basin. And it's very low rainfall. You only receive 13 inches of rain per year. The summer temperatures, we see highs in the mid-90s, lows in the low 60s, with an average in the high 70s most days. And the soils are primarily sedimentary, and most days they're rather alkaline, so that affects the vine's ability to uptake certain nutrients. So most of the growers will do ongoing soil amendments. We've got quite a high elevation, 4,000
to 4,500. Can you just sort of fill out that comment on the long mowing season, how it goes here?
Well, here, actually, the thing that we wind up having to combat in the Wilcox APA, most of the growing regions in Arizona, is that though the growing season is long, we can experience late frosts. So that can really affect flowering and a number of technological milestones in the grape development. So that's one thing that we have to think about when planting. We want varieties that are somewhat late bloomers. And the weather really does hold through about October. So it'll stay quite warm through from starting in about April through end of September, and then it starts to cool down. Does that answer your question?
Sure.
You see a little bit of rain in the winter, but it's really rather sweet. So, yeah, vast. Much, much smaller, and they experience more extreme weather events. So they'll see a lot of hail, they'll get snows and frosts later. So Wilcox is an easier place to grow grapes.
Are there only two vineyards?
Our estate vineyard is located in the Chiricahua foothills. There are really only five commercial vineyards in this area, so it's just south of the bounds of the Wilcox AVA, and it's pushing up into the Chiricahuas, which are what you see in the background here. At the time that the Wilcox AVA was accepted, they had also put forward an application for the Chiricahua foothills, but it was deemed that it wasn't distinct enough from the Wilcox AVA to warrant its own AVA, so the application is still in limbo while there's some more definition going on. Personally, I can say that I think it's quite a different region because it's a higher elevation. Your days are slightly cooler, so if the average summer highs, again, are they're low 90s as opposed to high 90s, it gets down to the low 50s at night. And then it's the low 70s for most of the day. The soils here are mostly loamy sands and sandy loams. So they're, again, quite draining. And at our vineyard, we have 40 acres. 10 acres are planted to whites. And this is a photo of the whites filling in the back today. And we have the remaining for reds. We have a dry creek bed that runs right through the property that divides the two sections. And that makes it really easy to actually see the soil profile. So right here, this is the south side of the vineyard, and this is where all of our reds are in the process of being planted and planted. And you can see it's much more reddish soil. And then on the north side, it's much brighter. And I brought, and everything is, of course, as you can see, extremely rocky. These rocks, we find them throughout the vineyard, and it's really, we've already broken our tractor twice this harvest, trying to dig holes to plant more beds. They're just everywhere. We've got, so this creek, it will flow when it's monsoon season. So before too long, right now we can drive down through it to the other side of the vineyard. Before long, we'll be able to. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention New Mexico, because we do purchase some of our fruit from New Mexico. So if you remember, we're located here in Wilcox, and we're purchasing grapes from them. So it really makes sense for us. Because the Arizona wine industry is growing, it's tricky to get grapes from Arizona. So a lot of people, they're all contracted out. So in order to grow, we need to find grapes where we can. So we purchase from a grower out of Demi. This year it'll be about 25 tons. And they are the Nimbus Valley ABA. They were one of New Mexico's first ABAs. Again, it's a large area in terms of acreage. And they're a part of the Nimbus watershed. They have a really wide variation in elevation within that ABA. And the vineyards that we source from are at 4,250 feet. They get even less rain than us per year. It's an average of 9 inches. And their soils are deep, silty clay loam. And that is all I have for growing regions of Arizona. Who has questions on that before I move on to tasting? C2. I'll start here.
Do you source any of the grapes from the Sonoyta ABA?
We don't. All of the wineries in the Sonoyta ABA that are growing grapes are using them for their own production. So I haven't seen any grapes from Sonoyta available for sale.
Do you use some of the California grapes?
We have, yes. Our Chardonnay from 2015 is from California. And then we have a lower tier set of wines called our Tank Series, and last year I purchased 20 grapes from California for that.
What made them choose Arizona as a place to grow their wine? That's question one. And two, why are you producing so many different wine types?
Speaking to your first question, the owners, Joan and Scott, they had lived here in the Napa area prior to moving to Phoenix area. Joan is a surgeon in physician. And so when they moved to Phoenix, they were already buying completely on wineries and wine, having lived here. So they had always dreamed, you know, someday perhaps we could open a winery. And after moving to Scottsdale, Phoenix area, they realized, oh gosh, there are wineries here, and we could do this here. So they started looking into it, found the vineyard site, and just went all in. So that's the answer to the first question. And as to why we're producing so many different types of wine, as you can imagine, since the winery's only been around for 5 years, and it's a growing yet small industry. People are really still figuring out what are the grapes that do the best in Arizona and our climate, and what can we do with them. So we're really just experimenting right now. Scott is really committed to producing single variety bottlings. This is Scott's vision for Aridus. Be producing single variety bottlings.
So with that said, will you, once you kind of figure out what you like the best, will you, you know, cut it down?
Yeah.
You will. Okay.
Yeah. We're doing that now. We are working with some odd varieties. We'll be tasting the Rossi Mountain today, which I think is just fantastic. And I would love to evangelize Rossi Mountain. at least seven, 8 acres planted.
What else are you seeing that you really like from Wilcox?
Oh gosh, and really, I love the straws in Wilcox. I think it's just a fantastic variety for the area. You get really nicely flavored and interesting aromatics out of the straws from the area. And I think you have to try it with that one. It's just, it loves being grown there. I think Sauvignon Blanc really does fantastically in the area. You know, you can get so many different aromatics out of Sauvignon Blanc, and we'd like to have a little bit of the green that you get in New Zealand, but ours really skews more towards tropical and citrus. I think it's a fun one to work with for me. And then Malvasia Bianca is one that it just does phenomenally in the area. It's very, very aromatic. It's a floral wine. It's related to Muscat. So we have a sweet one, we have dry one, we have a sparkling Petnat, and I just like all the things that you can do with it. Shall we taste?
Did you know that Dracaena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco is on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokesdog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year, your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, DracaenaWines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank. Welcome to this episode of Dracaena Wines on Wine. And today I have the pleasure of talking with Lisa Streed, who is the winemaker for Aridis Wine Company. And they're in Arizona. So when I was introduced to them, I have to honestly say I was shocked. I know that wine is made, and I think now we're in every state. Arizona just doesn't really come to the forefront of your brain when you think wines. And so I had the privilege of going to Napa Valley Wine Academy and meet Lisa in person and taste her wines. And I wanted to share her story with my readers, viewers, and listeners on the podcast. So hi, Lisa.
Hello.
All right. So first, I want to get to know you a little bit better. Originally, you're from Wyoming. You helped your uncle in vineyards in Washington. You went to college in Oregon. You worked in California, and now you settled in Arizona. So, I mean, that's a lot of states. So take us through your background, your history, and how you weaved your way through all these states.
Sure. Like you mentioned, I grew up in Wyoming. I lived there for the first 18 years of my life. And I never really even thought about wine while I was growing up or anything like that. It was just a drink that was in a bottle, and I didn't think about it at all. And I actually went to college in Ohio before getting a second degree in Oregon. And even while I was in school in Ohio and was really starting to taste wines and enjoy them, I still didn't even think about
wine as something that people engaged in as work. It was really just a pleasurable thing for me then. As you said, I did wind up in Oregon. I took a long circuitous route to wind up in Oregon, where I didn't really know anybody, except for my uncle, who had a small farm, still has a small farm and vineyard planted up in southwestern Washington.
Okay.
And so when I moved out there, I just started spending time with him out on his vineyard and his farm, and doing everything from, you know, suckering and training the vines to harvest. And I really love the process of, you know, picking all the grapes and doing the punch downs and just making these fruits into wine. And after the second harvest, helping him out there, it all just clicked for me. Oh, this is something that people do for a living. It just ticked all the boxes for me, because there was science involved, that I got to be moving around and like doing a very physical job, which I really enjoyed. And there was also this incredibly pleasurable product that you had at the end of it. So you got to really enjoy what you've made over the course of a year, a couple of years. And so I enrolled in school at Oregon State and got my degree in enology and viticulture. And I really haven't looked back since. I've loved the process of getting to where I am now. When I was in school, I interned at a winery in the Dundee Hills. And then when I graduated, just prior to that, I spoke with my advisor and I said, I want to go to a place that's big. And he said, well, we have a great relationship with Angie Gallo Winery and they're coming in a month or so. So why don't you interview with them? So I did, and they liked me well enough to hire me. And so after school, I went down to Modesto and started working at E&J Gallo. So I went from very small to very big. And after 3 years there, I knew I wanted to go and work in Arizona at some point. And I saw a job posting for Arizona. And I had never thought that it was something that I'd ever see in my life, posting for a winemaker in Arizona. And I applied, and after a while, a few rounds of interviews, here I am. And that's how I wound up here at Eridan.
Well, that's awesome. And I totally understand the concept of seeing something you produce. I equate it to like an artist when they paint something and it's up, you know, in a gallery or something, the pride that, you know, that they must feel when somebody admires it. The pride that you feel when somebody is drinking your wine and they get that smile on their face, or they take the time to message you on social media or something like that. And now, you know, when somebody posts a picture of the wine, it's, you know, you get all warm and fuzzy, right? And it doesn't go away. I think we could be, this is our 2016, we just bottled yesterday, and that's our first vintage was 2013. So we're young, but like, it's so exhilarating when somebody tastes your wine and gives you credit. And I think we could be in our 60th vintage and it still would be that way. Right.
Yeah. It's really humbling too. It's such a wonderful thing to be able to make a product that somebody enjoys and they want to talk about it and want to share it with their friends. I mean, what a pleasure to be able to bring that to somebody.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So you did mention that your first step in the winemaking industry was E&J Gallo. Now that is really, you, and you talked about the difference of big versus small. So what are what would be the number one, oh my God, this is so different between Ian J. Gallo and Aridis?
Oh gosh. Number one, the scale. You necessarily have to do things differently just based on the scale of production. So at Ian J. Gallo, they're processing, you know, hundreds of tons per day, whereas our entire production is under 200 tons here. So it winds up being things that can be automated at a very large scale, have to do them by hand at a small scale. Fundamentally, it's the same process. It's just the means by which you get there. I think also one thing about Ian J. Gallo is that, you know, they're so large. There's a lot of resources and a lot of people that you can tap into if you have a question. There's just so many different people, such different backgrounds and such a different experience. And the wealth of information that you can get from people is pretty staggering. And it's definitely one asset that large wine companies have. Whereas if you're a smaller guy like us here, you're really relying on yourself and your ingenuity to a greater extent, or having to go out and really dig to find the solutions to the problems that you might be facing. Those are a couple of things that I can think of right off the top of my head, but I mean, each is exciting in its own way. It's really thrilling to know that the buck stops with you, and the decisions that you make really have a direct impact on what the final outcome is. Whereas if you're at a very large place, that's mitigated quite a bit. You're still important, but you're really a cog in the wheel. So.
Right. There's more checks and balances if you make a decision and somebody above you or somebody else in there was like, no, we don't want to do that. It's, you know, you have a little cushion that you feel safe in making decisions, where here you're kind of on that ledge, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. According to your bio, you worked in specialty winemaking team at Ian J. Gallo. So what is a specialty winemaking team?
So the way it was structured when I was there, the specialty team took care of sparkling wines and any non-standard wine products. So specialty was really, it encompassed a lot of flavored beverages. And a lot of really interesting and weird techniques and technical stuff that you don't normally encounter in traditional winemaking.
Okay. All right. And then you moved on to research winemaker. So what research are you doing?
So I was working in the process technology team. And so they oversee the pilot winery in Livingston, which is Gallo's largest winemaking site. And the pilot winery is really interested in changing techniques and also trialing equipment that, with an eye towards, you know, being able to scale up to serve the needs of this very large winery. So, a lot of the research that I was helping execute was really focused on if we change this particular method or if we tweak this aspect of winemaking, how will that impact the final product? Will it drive it towards, say, a brighter fruit style or a more cooked fruit style? So focusing on just changing one variable in order to drive a different style or focusing on trialing pieces of equipment in order to see how those could also possibly make things more efficient or change wine style again.
Oh, okay. So really attacking the science aspect of winemaking.
Yeah.
Did you have a preference of which way, of where, how you liked it better?
Oh, I loved it all. Yeah, no, it was definitely an education and really fascinating to see how just really minor change to the process can really affect your final outcome.
And that must have been so huge in your experience, live experience. That's something you're not really going to get in a classroom somewhere. So that must be, you know, major education that you stuck in your brain to bring with you as you move along.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We were doing as many trials as we could per season because you get one chance per year. So really, really setting that up and, you know, getting it as controlled as you possibly can. And then it was just such a learning experience.
Okay. All right, so we're going to move on to where you are currently, and that is Aridus. And your tasting room is in Scottsdale, but your fruit basically comes from Wilcox. Is that correct?
Yes, we do have a tasting room in Wilcox as well, but the bulk of our sales are in Scottsdale. Our facility, our processing plant is here in Wilcox, and our fruit comes from Wilcox, from a little bit further south as well, where our state vineyard is, and from New Mexico. In the past, we've gotten a little bit of fruit from California, but yeah, really in about within 2 hours of the facility is where all of our fruit, for the most part, comes from.
Okay. And are you, I'm assuming that since it's in all these areas, you have green contracts with these growers?
Yes. It's a different with everybody, but yeah, we do.
Okay. And how much traveling between those 2 hours in a radius are you doing on a regular basis?
Well, right now, since we're just pre-harvest, I'm trying to make it out to a vineyard per week, sometimes a little bit more than that. I tend not to go over to New Mexico too frequently because our grower there is, and he has so many years of experience. He's got 30 plus years in the game in New Mexico, so he really knows what he's doing. I can tell him what I want, and he'll call me up and say the fruit's ready, and we're going to pick it. We'll just go pick it up. But for this area, I do tend to go out and taste and pull samples, literally pull samples myself on a pretty regular basis. And then from that, make a picking call.
And you said it's about 200 tons total?
Last year we did 175 tons. And this year we're going to be doing just a little bit less than that. So probably we never really know until all the fruit comes in, but we're thinking about 100.
And what does that correlate into about how many cases do you produce?
We're just over 8,000 cases per year. Yeah.
And is that kind of where they want to stay? Are they looking to be bigger? Are they comfy where they are?
We're in the process right now of our planting out our estate vineyard. And once we have all of our estate vineyard online, we really aren't looking to be sourcing too much fruit from other growers. So ideally it will all be coming from our estate before too long. But right now we don't quite know what the crop load will wind up being.
Right.
So changes a little bit from year to year. We're definitely growing our entry-level tier, which we call our Tank Series. So that we're hoping to get into some more like major distribution markets. But it's we started in 2012, and so we're relatively new. We're still feeling out what our market supports and where exactly we want to sit in that market. Right. But the growth has been phenomenal from where we started to where we are now.
So according to Aridus's website, you're also a custom crush facility. So for people who don't know what a custom crush facility is, can you first do a brief explanation of what a custom crush facility is? And then like how many clients on average, you know, not specifics, but how many clients do you basically custom crush for?
Sure. So custom crush is where we'll bring in, we'll take grapes from other growers who have their own wine labels, and we'll produce that wine for them. And here in Arizona, what that typically looks like is these are people who have planted vineyards and want to have their own wine label, but they're not quite ready to build their own winery. So we have currently three small clients, one of whom has made it clear they want to stay with us forever. They want us to always be making their wine. Another one is currently in the process of, you know, getting their equipment and starting to build up their own small winery on their site. So right now we're still producing the wines for them. And then our third client is just coming to us for the first time this year, and so we'll see what he winds up wanting to do in the long run. But a number of Arizona wineries have started out bringing their fruit to us and then have gone on to build their own facilities. And that's kind of the way that we want it. We want to provide a space for people who are just getting started to, you know, see how the process goes and then eventually grow and leave and build their own facilities. We've always envisioned there would be this sort of turnover.
Are you their consulting winemaker, or they have their own winemaker and it's really just using your facilities?
For two of them, I'm the consulting winemaker, and for the third, I receive the plans from their consulting winemaker and we execute to their plan.
You currently have 40 acres of estate fruit. And you had mentioned that you ultimately, Aridus's ultimate goal is to be all estate fruit. Do you have estate labeled fruit wines yet, or are they mostly just used in blends at the moment?
We're in the process. So last year was our first year bringing in fruit from the vineyard. For our first release, we blended all of the whites together, save for a little bit here and there, and we're releasing that as our field blend. But this year, we'll be keeping all of our fruit separate and releasing it as a single variety bottling. So right now, what's producing on our vineyard are the whites, so Sauvignon Blanc, Viognier, and Malvasia Bianca. And then on the red side, we have Cabernet Sauvignon that's been in the ground for a year. We just finished planting Malbec and Syrah this year. Next year, we'll have Petit Syrah, Cab Franc, Merlot, Tempranillo, and I believe Graciano going in, and then we should be fully planted out. But our plan is to, from here on out, it will all be single variety ones coming from our estate vineyard.
Excellent. Okay. And now, this blew my mind. So you just came back from a 3-month stint in Australia to harvest hop. So what I think is funny, I guess, you know, not ha-ha funny, but like different, is normally, first of all, I would love to do that. But normally, that's what people do when they first get out of school, or even while they're in school, they go and do these harvest hops and then come back to get the job. You did it in the reverse order. So how did this come about?
Well, I mean, I always knew that I wanted to do some Southern Hemisphere harvests. And when I graduated school, I went right into full-time work at E&J Gallo. And even while I was there, I had asked, is there any way I can go and do a harvest in the Southern Hemisphere? And the answer was always no, for liability reasons, you cannot. So I wanted to do it, but it just was never in the cards while I was at a larger place. When I came here, I did my first harvest, we got through bottling, did the second harvest, and I knew I could really trust the crew here, so I just asked the owner, Scott, would he mind if I took a leave of absence for a few months and went and did another harvest? And he was all for it. He said, sure, absolutely. Just knowing that seeing a different process, going to a different place, I could gather some more knowledge that could be applied here. It was a little backwards because, you know, I didn't go and work as a cellar hand. I knew I was overqualified for those sorts of positions and that I would have to go to a larger sort of winery in order to have a position that was winemaking based. So I really focused my efforts on just finding larger wineries that had vintage winemaker, harvest winemaker positions available. And when I interviewed with Currie Hill Winery in the Clare Valley, it seemed like a really good fit because they do a fair amount of Syrah, and Syrah is one of our flagship grapes here. They offered me the position, and I took it and was gone for 3 months, and I got to skip all the bottling here. it was really a wonderful experience. Yeah.
Will there be a return visit?
Oh, you never know. I would love to go back. I had such a fantastic time with them. But you never know. We'll see.
Maybe a different region? Do you have?
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, perhaps New Zealand, because we also really love Sauvignon Blanc here. So seeing how it's done someplace else would be
well, you just, if you just planted Malbec, Argentina, you know.
It's true, yeah.
So one of the reasons why people like to do the harvest hops, you getting into being the winemaker there is even more phenomenal, is to just see the differences of how things are done. Just like everyday normal things, I'm sure, are done differently. What was like the, you know, one thing that you were like, oh, well, that's not how we do it?
I think the first hurdle was simply that I had to convert my thinking entirely from gallons to liters.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about that. Oh.
Yeah, everything was in metrics. So that was the first challenge. And they even measure sugars differently over there. They measure everything in bome as opposed to bricks, which is just a different scale. So really, we may have been talking about the same thing, but I had to really, for the first month or so, just constantly be mentally recalculating things to be sure that I wasn't saying something that I didn't mean, you know, or wasn't writing a work order that would really fuck something up.
Okay.
Yeah, but aside from that, they had a couple of different cap management strategies down there that I had never encountered before. They had roto fermenters, so there a couple of their tanks would just, you know, a couple of times a day turn a key and the tank would roll, and that was their equivalent of, say, a pump over a punch down.
Right.
They had a number of tanks that did pump overs, like you'd imagine them, but they were all auto pump overs. So somebody would go around a couple times a day and check and make sure that the lines weren't blocked up with seeds and stuff like that. Something that you would notice immediately if you were the one manually looking up the pump over, but not something that is noticed immediately
if it's
auto. And then they had like forced air, compressed air pump overs, so tanks that were outfitted with compressed air, or they had the option for compressed air or nitrogen at the base of the tank, that you turn it on and it would pulse this compressed air in, and as a result of that it would push up and break up the cap and get the the extraction that way. And that one I really enjoyed, because it's something that we were doing, a sort of modified sort of pump over like that here, but only just to get a little bit of air into some of these ferments. And once I realized that is something that we could do for cap management, I was like, yes, I'm going to do that. So it won't be all the time, but for a couple of our pump overs this year, we'll be doing that instead. So,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, really cool. Those are the big takeaways, I think, for me.
Wow. Okay, so my last question is, one of our taglines is pursue your passion, and you obviously are pursuing your passion in wine. So if you were to give, you know, one or two pieces of advice to somebody who wants to enter the wine industry to pursue their passion, what would you tell them?
I'd say really pay attention to your sleep schedule. especially during harvest, because it's just so easy to wear yourself down without realizing it. And if you want to be your best during harvest, you really got to be getting in the sleep and making sure you're eating. But it's, if you want to get into the wine industry and you're thinking about it, and really think, just go for it. It's the most wonderful industry to be working in. Something new every day. So many wonderful people work in wine, and it's constantly changing, so you're always challenged.
That is true. There's always something new that pops up that you've got to figure out.
Yeah, and that's great, because how awful would it be to just be sitting here and dialing it in day after day?
That is that is true. Yeah, but you're right. That is what makes it exciting. And no 2 days are the same. And if that's what you want, this is where you should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I actually forgot to send this to you in the email, what I talked about talking to you. But I pretty much end every episode of Dracena Wines on Wine with a game of opposites. And it's super simple. There's no right or wrong answer, and there's really nothing to prep for it anyway. I'm going to give you two, as long as you're okay with it, I'm going to give you two words. They're opposites, and whichever one, you know, speaks to you more, you just kind of shout it out. Okay?
Okay.
All right. I'm going to start off with non-wine terms to kind of get you in the groove, and then we'll go into wine. Okay? Here we go. Ready? Night or day?
Day.
Sunset or sunrise?
Sunrise.
Black or white?
Black.
Walk or run?
Run.
Food or drink?
Food.
Old world, new world?
New world.
Sweet or dry?
Dry.
Bubbles or still?
Bubbles.
Oak or stainless?
Oak.
Drink now or drink later?
Drink now.
Blend or variety?
Variety.
Vintage or non-vintage?
Vintage.
Cork or screw cap?
Screw cap.
Napa or Sonoma?
Sonoma.
Commercial or indigenous?
Indigenous.
Yeah, all right. Bordeaux or Rhone?
Rhone.
Warm climate, cool climate?
Cool climate.
And that's it. See, not too bad. I hope not too bad.
No, that was fun.
Oh, thank you. So anyway, thank you very much. Is there anything I didn't cover about Eridus or about yourself that you want the people to know?
I should probably put in a plug and say that we can be found online at eriduswineco.com, and you can see our entire lineup, you can read blog posts from me, and you can order our wines there if you're interested.
Okay. And what about on social media?
Oh, gosh. I don't really do social media, but I know we're on Facebook, Instagram, probably Twitter, too. I don't really know. But if you look up Eridus, A-R-I-D-U-S, it should pop up.
Right. And you just got a new puppy.
We did, yes. Yeah, name is Astro. We found him eating roadkill in the middle of the road. So we figured we could feed him something better than that.
Yeah. I've seen pictures. He looks pretty happy now.
Yeah. He's growing. He's gonna be quite a lot of dog when he's fully grown.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, and I appreciate you taking your time out. I know it's a busy time. You said you're pre-harvest, so how far along are you?
I just scheduled our first pick for next Monday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we'll be breeding in Sauvignon Blanc next week.
Wow. Is that the normal time, or are you a little ahead? Yeah. Normal time.
We usually bring in top long mid-July, so not surprised by it at all.
Well, thank you again, and I hope we didn't pull too much time away from your busy schedule, but I appreciate you sharing your story of passion with us, and I'm glad that I can help spread the word of Eridus. I thoroughly enjoyed your wines at the tasting in Napa Valley, and I don't know, maybe we'll get out to Arizona one of these days and see you again.
Oh, yeah. Come see us anytime.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have a good harvest.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Dracaena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, and Periscope as @DracaenaWines. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd, or email us at DracaenaWines.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find us more easily. We are found on all of your favorite aggregators. To subscribe easily to iTunes, go to bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. And that's a capital D for Dracaena and capital P for podcast. Please check out our award-winning wines and find out about our wine club at DracaenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!